Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a warm Farm Bureau welcome to the Secretary of the United States Department of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack.
Thank you. Thank you, folks. Thank you very much. Thank you. Bob, thanks very much. I have thanked Bob privately, but I need to thank him publicly for arranging this meeting here in Hawaii. I still have fond memories of Atlanta. Not being able to get in or out of Atlanta. And I'm privileged to be here today. 150 years ago, in the midst of an epic struggle upon which the fate of our nation and its experiment with a democratic government hung in the balance, our political leaders, led by President Lincoln, created the Department of Agriculture. The establishment of the department in the midst of a civil war underscored the importance of agriculture and rural America to the country. What was true 150 years ago remains true today. Agriculture and rural America matter. And no group of people understands that truth any better than the men and the women who lead the American Farm Bureau. I feel privileged and honored to speak to you today for that very reason. You all know that as a result of the hard work and sacrifice of hundreds of thousands of farmers, ranchers, and producers, Americans enjoy a rich diversity of safe and nutritious food, almost all of which comes from here at home in America. You appreciate the important role agriculture plays in our overall economy, responsible for 1 in 12 jobs. When American producers earn record income, as they did last year, you understand that workers in food processing, packaging, and farm equipment manufacturing also benefit from more jobs and higher wages. And you recognize the underlying value of the American brand in agriculture, known around the world as one of quality and value, which may help explain why America leads the world in agricultural exports. Last year, in part, aided by the strategic focus on trade at USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service, ag exports reached a record level of $137.4 billion in sales, creating for our nation a $42 billion trade surplus and supporting over 1 million jobs. And you all recognize that all of this represents just the beginning, as agriculture now leads the development of an American-led bio-based economy, where what we grow and raise is used to make fuel, chemicals, and polymers to complement the traditional production of food, fiber, and feed. I need to say at the outset how appreciative I am for the strong partnership USDA and Farm Bureau has had and will continue to have. Bob Stallman and your national leadership team have worked extraordinarily hard. They've helped to expand ag exports through trade missions, and they strongly advocated for the passage of 3 free trade agreements with South Korea, Panama, and Colombia. They constantly remind Congress of the importance of the safety net for producers, as well as the need for fair and open markets here at home, all goals that we share at USDA. Your leadership team went above and beyond the call of duty by also providing leadership in a project to build a Chinese garden in our National Arboretum, helping us to improve relationships with our number one agricultural trading customer. And at the same time, it was Farm Bureau that helped to lead an effort, an important effort, to form the Farmer and Rancher Alliance to better connect agriculture to the 98% of America that does not farm, leading to a better appreciation for what agriculture means to America. And the strength of our relationship can also be measured by the willingness to say what needs to be said. Farm Bureau leaders from across the nation felt free to express concerns about regulations being considered by EPA, the Department of Labor, and other departments. As a result, in EPA, I ask Administrator Lisa Jackson to participate in regular listening sessions with ag leaders to hear those concerns firsthand. And we work together to assure producers that EPA did not intend to regulate farm dust or spilled milk. Now, I know there's more work to be done in regulatory matters, including EPA's guidance on water quality and the Department of Labor's proposed child labor law for employees of non-family farm operations. I want you to know that I've reached out to the Department of Labor about the proposed rule. I wanted to explain the concerns I had heard in the countryside about the impact on traditional family farm operations. I know that you all share a deep concern for the safety of all of our children, particularly those working on farms and working with farm machinery. I've encouraged the Labor Department to spend some time communicating more thoroughly the purpose and the intent of the proposed rule, to reassure folks that it will not interfere with families and their ability to raise their children with a love and appreciation for hard work done in a safe way. I understand, and I've explained to the Department of Labor, that this isn't just about the farming operation. This is about a set of values important to people who live and work and raise their families in rural communities. The value of hard work, the importance of independence, the appreciation for sacrifice, and the difficulties associated with farming. I've also asked our team at USDA to help, to look to reallocate resources from our research, education, and economics mission to help fund additional training opportunities for those who need additional training so they can receive it conveniently so that they can operate equipment safely. I want to pledge to the delegates here today that your USDA will continue to listen and to ensure regulators understand the full impact on farmers, ranchers, and producers of rules and regulations as they are proposed and before they are finalized. I know I'm speaking to the nation's most concerned conservationists and stewards of the land and water. I know that American producers care deeply about our natural resources that help to produce this incredible bounty that we're blessed with. In the last 3 years alone, USDA has entered into conservation agreements and easements with over 500,000 producers and landowners, now enrolling a record number of acres in conservation programs. These agreements help to preserve the soil, improve water quality, and promote wildlife diversity. These agreements also add hundreds of millions of dollars to local economies in rural areas, helping to create thousands of jobs for local contracting firms and those involved in outdoor recreation. I also know that as a result of evaluations we've done at USDA, we know and we can prove that these voluntary conservation plans have been embraced by farmers and ranchers and are making a real environmental difference, including in large watershed areas like the Upper Mississippi River region, the Great Lakes, and the Chesapeake Bay. I'm proud of the unique work that our team at the National Resources Conservation Service has performed over the last 3 years, getting us to a record of enrolled acres. I know their efforts have impacted every major region of the country, including awarding the largest easement grant to any state to Florida for work in the Everglades, a partnership with the Department of Interior to provide regulatory certainty while protecting the sage grouse, and a very innovative approach to the Gulf oil spill and its impact on migratory birds by creating 470,000 acres of temporary wetland habitat. I want you also to know that I'm equally proud of the work that's being done by our Farm Service Agency and our risk management team. This includes a record number of farm loans during the last 3 years, totaling over 103,000 loans, extending more than $14 billion in credit. 2 general sign-ups for CRP, an expansion of crop insurance to include over 130 types of crops, over $17 billion in crop insurance payments to 325,000 producers faced with losses as a result of natural disasters, and additional disaster payments totaling over $3 billion to nearly 250,000 operators. And last but not least, a long overdue but recently announced crop insurance premium reduction for corn and soybean farmers. We're going to continue our efforts to ensure the crop insurance program for all commodities is actuarially sound and premiums reasonably and fairly priced. We'll also work to improve service and to streamline processes. The most recent example of that work was done when we created more convenient crop and acreage reporting dates and reduced the time it takes to have an area declared a disaster. Now, while farm income is up and is expected to stay up, many farm families need USDA to also focus on helping to create off-farm income and jobs. And our rural development team stepped up to the challenge during a tough economy. In the last 3 years, USDA Rural Development financed grants and loans to over 50,000 small businesses, helping to create or retain 266,000 rural jobs, supported over 300 broadband expansion projects that will help 7 million more Americans access this vital infrastructure. We made possible 6,250 community facility projects that include the building and construction of hospitals, schools, fire and police stations, and libraries. We funded over 5,100 wastewater treatment plants and sewage plants, providing cleaner water to 18 million Americans. And we financed the construction and improvement of nearly 80,000 miles of electric wiring to provide more reliable power to those who live in rural America. Our work, including our effort to promote a regional approach to wealth and job creation, is one of the reasons I can say today that the unemployment rate is dropping more quickly in rural America than in any other place in the country. We're working hard, and the results show it. But despite the successes of the past 3 years, more work remains. The two biggest challenges facing USDA revolve around the 2012 Farm Bill and significant reductions in the USDA's operating budget and program budget. All of us recognize the fiscal imperative of spending less money at the federal level. We stepped up immediately with a $4 billion savings over 10 years by negotiating a new standard agreement for crop insurance. But we know that more will be required. During the Committee of 12 deliberations, the House and Senate Agricultural Committees proposed a $23 billion reduction in program resources over 10 years. Representative Ryan, the chair of the House Budget Committee, proposed in 2012 budget for a $48 billion reduction, while the President's plan for economic growth and deficit reduction proposed and suggested a $33 billion reduction. Now, these proposals set the range. The hard part will be settling on a number and what must be cut to reach that number. Last November, I traveled to Ankeny, Iowa, to deliver a speech setting forth the key principles upon which a 2012 Farm Bill ought to be crafted. Those principles are worth quickly repeating today. First and foremost, the Farm Bill must provide an adequate financial safety net and help for producers when times are tough and when they need help the most. That safety net must include a continued commitment and an expansion of crop insurance, combined with some method of revenue protection when producers are faced with significant losses, either by a result of natural disaster or very low prices. I believe that if this is crafted properly, the combination of crop insurance and a revenue protection program would eliminate the need for our direct payment system, which I think most have to acknowledge, under the current fiscal circumstances, may be far too expensive. And many of us know it's very difficult to explain at times to the 84% of Americans who do not live or work in rural communities. Second, the Farm Bill must continue agriculture's longstanding interest in stewardship and conservation. In a period of limited resources, policymakers would be wise to provide adequate resources plus additional flexibility in what will likely be fewer funded conservation programs to guarantee the best results for each dollar invested. At the same time, those policymakers should challenge us at USDA to work with the private sector and other partners to leverage those resources as far as possible, to provide measurable and verifiable results from each investment, and to the extent possible, furnish to you, the producers and landowners, a degree of regulatory certainty as significant investments are asked and made. Third, because every USDA dollar put to work promoting trade generates a return of $35 in trade activity, any farm bill must encourage and promote continued expanded trade. Given the benefits of the recently signed free trade agreements with South Korea, Panama, and Colombia, and President Obama's efforts towards a trans-Pacific partnership, USDA must continue to have a broad range of options by which to facilitate trade. Fourth, a well-funded research effort remains key and critical to the U.S.'s ability to retain its competitive edge and global leadership in agricultural productivity. The correlation between cutting-edge research and improved productivity could not be clearer. As a result of research at USDA, our land-grant universities, and the private sector, American agriculture ranked second in productivity gains of all segments of our economy since 1980. And recent successes at USDA to map the genome of cattle to identify best breeding opportunities or to develop drought and flood-resistant crops highlight the future potential for continued advancements in agricultural productivity. We understand at USDA, and so do you at Farm Bureau, the power and the potential of scientific breakthroughs. This is one of the reasons we aggressively used process improvement recently to reduce by half the amount of time USDA takes to make regulatory decisions relating to new advances in crop production without reducing the quality of the review. The 2012 Farm Bill must continue unwavering support for research and development. Fifth, given the nature and the aging nature of our farmers, and given recent trends suggesting that some young people are again being attracted to agriculture, the Farm Bill ought to better support beginning farmers, including those wishing to build local and regional food systems. Regardless of the size of the operation, or what folks want to grow or raise, or how they want to grow and raise crops and livestock, we should do everything we can to encourage as many young people as possible to become farmers, ranchers, and producers. We all need to work together and be committed to an innovative approach to recruit these young people. At the same time, we should use this Farm Bill debate and discussion as a great opportunity to better educate all of America about where their food comes from and the challenges that American producers face in helping to feed a growing global population with diminished natural resources. Now, we all call it a Farm Bill, but we know it involves so much more. Specialty crop assistance, energy, nutrition assistance, business and job creation. Time today doesn't permit a separate discussion of them, but no farm, food, and jobs bill would be complete without thoroughly addressing each. And as this bill is being drafted, I encourage Congress to see the potential in focusing on regional economic development and the enormous potential of a bio-based economy. Small communities may not have the local capacity, the organization, or the resources to attract economic opportunity alone. But operating as part of a region, those resources can be maximized and leveraged successfully. The potential of a bio-based economy for rural America is unlimited. Imagine a rural America with hundreds of biorefineries using waste from livestock or biomass from crop production to create new feedstocks for chemicals and for polymers, helping to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels imported from somewhere else, while creating better jobs, better paying jobs, for your children and grandchildren so they can live, work, and raise their families in rural America. Last year, I challenged the leadership of FFA to give me their thoughts on the Farm Bill. I know the Farm Bureau worked with them as well to help develop those ideas. Recently, FFA's national leadership team came to D.C. to give me their report. What an extraordinary, impressive, articulate group of young people. And chief among their recommendations was the need to more effectively address the high cost of getting into farming and ranching. They recognize that the availability of credit, affordable credit, remains a real barrier to those who dream of farm ownership and working for themselves. I think Farm Bureau leaders would be impressed with the depth of their recommendations, and you all might consider affording them time on a future meeting agenda to present them. I've thought a great deal about those FFA leaders and other members of FFA that I've met along the way. These young people are rightly focused on the future, and we owe it to them to be focused on the future as well. At USDA, we need to constantly strengthen our services and improve our performance, notwithstanding reduced budgets. To do so, candidly, will require tough choices and tough calls. Over the next few minutes, I'd like to visit with you about some of those tough choices and tough calls we're announcing today. Since 2010, Congress has reduced our discretionary operating budget by more than $3 billion, which is roughly a 12% cut. While every mission area received reductions, some agencies were reduced more than others. Agencies facing steep cuts, specifically in their salaries and expense line item that funds people and personnel, included the Farm Service Agency, Rural Development, the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, the Agricultural Research Service, and the Food and Nutrition Service. And in an effort to avoid further cuts to programs that people like, Congress also made deep cuts in departmental management and the staff offices that provide support for all those folks on the front line doing good work in the mission areas, folks like Joe Glauber, the chief economist, the general counsel's office. Their appropriation was cut by nearly 18%. In the end, this does little to ease reductions in these important mission areas. Why? Well, simply put, you cannot severely limit the backroom operations without impacting negatively the whole operation. Now, we understood this day of reduced budgets was coming, and we decided at USDA to be proactive. First, we started last year by reducing travel, supplies, and printing costs by an aggregate of $90 million. Second, last year many agencies put hiring controls in place, and those were followed by the institution of a targeted early retirement and early separation incentive program. Initially, over 4,400 employees of USDA retired on their own or took advantage of the early out programs. We instituted the program again this year on a broader basis, and since October 1st, another 2,500 employees have elected to take advantage of retirement opportunities. That's nearly 7,000 people retiring in 15 months, and that number is sure to grow as this year progresses. Now, these departures will allow us some flexibility, in some cases to eliminate positions or restructure positions to be more relevant to meet the needs of our customers. And many of the positions that will be filled will be at pay rates less than before. Given the reduced resources, our other choice would have been further reductions in force or furloughs, which would be extraordinarily disruptive to the services that matter to you and those who live in rural America. These workforce reductions have been spread across all agencies throughout many locations around the country, including reductions in the D.C. headquarters and regional office. And both management and rank-and-file positions have been reduced. Now, these reductions in workforce and retirement came just at the time when our work was increasing. More was being demanded of our staff. For example, the new programs called for in the 2008 Farm Bill, FSA with reduced workforce, was required to institute a new disaster program, the SURE program, or the livestock forage or indemnity programs. At the same time, RD and FSA were required to implement the new energy title. Workloads were also increased in the area of nutrition assistance as a result of the recession and expanded need to help struggling families manage during tough times. Our efforts to manage with less money and fewer workers and a record increase in workload included an effort by the departmental management team to improve service by looking internally to review seven management responsibilities that were common to all mission areas. We wanted to determine how service could be strengthened and provided more efficiently. The review included civil rights and human resources, budget and finance, security, information technology, property management, and procurement. Hundreds of USDA employees engaged in the process and developed 379 recommendations to strengthen service and create greater efficiencies. Today, we're reaffirming 133 recommendations that describe processes that were already in place, providing quality service in an efficient way. But we're also announcing 27 recommendations of the remaining 246 that reflect a new way of doing business within the department. This announcement will be followed over the course of the next fiscal year with subsequent announcements for the rest of the recommendations and their implementation plans. Let me give you a couple of examples of what we're talking about. We're going to take 700 different cell phone plans, and we're going to reduce them to about 10 to leverage the combined buying power of USDA agencies. We're going to coordinate geospatial investments. We're going to standardize purchases of cybersecurity projects and products, and we're going to centralize certain human resource functions and develop a strategic sourcing program. When we estimate that the implementation of these recommendations will allow us over time to avoid spending millions of dollars in less effective ways while preserving the funding for programs directly serving you in rural America and also avoiding furloughs or further reductions in workforce that could interfere with the prompt delivery of services. The ultimate goal of this administrative effort will be the optimal use of our people, better results for those we serve, and the most effective use of tax dollars for the benefit of the taxpayer. Now, budget cuts and retirements, combined with increased workloads, also necessitated a review of USDA locations throughout the nation and the world. I ask that each agency and mission area examine its office footprint and make recommendations to use locations most effectively and efficiently. I ask, should offices be consolidated, closed, or regionalized? And if closures or consolidations were to be recommended, I ask that the mission area articulate very clearly the criteria used in making that recommendation and a plan for dealing with impacted personnel in order to save jobs. Today, the Farm Service Agency, NRCS, FAS, APHIS, Rural Development, Farm Safety and Inspection Services, and the Food and Nutrition and Consumer Services are unveiling their recommendations for over 250 office closures and consolidations. These locations will be joined by 12 labs at 10 locations that ARS has already received permission from Congress to close this year. Even with these changes, we will still have a very strong presence in virtually all counties across the nation. Now, a complete list of the locations by these recommendations will be available on our website at usda.gov, together with the criteria used for making these recommendations. The process is going to be transparent, as it should be, and I want to assure everyone that USDA intends to comply with any notice or public hearing requirement imposed by law or required by Congress. Prior to the speech today, I did have a chance to reach out to several congressional leaders to inform them of our recommendations. I want to just say a few words specifically about FSA offices, since the largest number of closures, 131, is in this mission area. First, in making the decision to close an office and consolidate, we relied on the 2008 Farm Bill criteria for determining what offices should be considered. Of the 131 offices on the list, 35 currently have no employees. Let that sink in for a second. 35 offices, no employees. The balance of the offices either have one person or at most two people and are located within 20 miles of an existing FSA office, more specifically and highly staffed. The work of these offices, these smaller offices, will be assigned to the adjoining county office and personnel given the opportunity to transfer as well. Our choice was either to maintain this footprint or reduce our effort at improved technology to better serve producers or furlough workers and disrupt service to many people. Now, we've already invested millions of dollars and thousands of hours in an effort to get technology that would allow us to provide better service to producers with reduced staff. When fully operational, we believe it will allow farmers and ranchers to access many of the FSA programs online, at home, at convenient times, when and where and under what circumstances dictated by the farmer. Over the long haul, we believe farmers and ranchers across this country will be better served by this choice that we make and announce today. These closures and consolidations will begin taking place over the late winter and spring. FSA's goal is to finish the consolidation by July, while all other agencies except the Food Safety District offices aim to close facilities sometime by the end of this fiscal year in September. Now, I know that some may be inconvenienced by this choice, but I want you to know that services will not be interrupted. You know, I know, the time has come for our country's fiscal house to be put in order, and that requires tough calls and tough choices. Now, as we enter our 150th year, our nation faces that economic reality of the need to reduce deficits and debt. Farmers and ranchers faced with that same dilemma during the 1980s made the tough calls and the tough choices for the long-term good. Farmers reduced their debt, and they found the resources to invest in new technologies and equipment, which led to greater productivity. That greater productivity enabled us to export and to find new uses for crops we grow, resulting in higher income for producers and jobs for those living in small towns. That productivity also holds the great promise of a new American-led bio-based economy. Our nation always emerges from crisis stronger, and I believe now will not be an exception. American agriculture is the greatest and most productive the world has ever seen. Working together with Farm Bureau, I'm confident USDA will manage this change as opposed to being managed by the change, and will emerge stronger and more capable to serve your interests and the interests of America's farmers, ranchers, and producers. Now, let me close on a somewhat personal note. When I began this job as USDA Secretary, I talked about the disproportionate sacrifice rural families made to this country during time of war. Approximately 50% of our military comes from rural America, a place that's home to 16% of America. I know that a substantial number of the young men and women who are returning from Iraq and who will return from Afghanistan are from your hometowns and my hometown. Little did I know that when I started this job, that one of those young people would be my 19-year-old nephew from Mount Pleasant, Iowa, a town of 8,000, that he would be serving as a U.S. Marine in Afghanistan. I pray every day for his safe return and the return of each and every one of our brave servicemen and women. I suspect that there are moms and dads, granddads and grandmoms, and other family members in this audience today that have someone in harm's way. Rural America is an extraordinary place, inhabited by good, hardworking, productive people. We in America owe rural America a debt of gratitude, not just for what it produces, but also for what it sacrifices. During the 19th century, farmers and rural Americans helped to save a nation. During the 20th century, farmers and rural Americans helped to build the strongest nation on earth. At the beginning of the 21st century, farmers and rural Americans are once again helping to strengthen America so that it may continue for this century to be the freest, the safest, and greatest nation on earth. God bless you all and your families for what you do for my family and America's families. And God bless America, for its best days are still ahead. Thank you very much.